Welcome to Middle School Matters podcast number 689, the mythical paper dictionary and your Choppelganger. We're going to talk about some Choppelganger stuff. We got some jokes. We got some resources for your classroom. So without further ado, here's the wonderful, the magnanimous, the Mr. Troy Patterson.
All right. Welcome back to the show. I am Troy Patterson, and with me is the world's greatest co-show host, Mr. Sean McGurr. Hey, Sean.
Well, hello there. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing okay.
That's good.
We're making it. Yeah.
Yeah.
We had a snow day this past week. I mean, can't beat that. And it's going to be a 25 below day probably on Tuesday. So it's going to be a 2.5 day week next week.
I was going to say, you get 2.5 day. You get Monday off, I'm sure.
Monday off, and Friday's a half day. End of the quarter. New semester at the end of Friday next week.
That's cool.
Yeah.
You know, because of my job, sometimes friends and other people ask me to fix things.
And that's true.
One of my friends said that their laptop keeps singing hello to them.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, and I went over and said, "Oh, I see. It's Adele."
Ah, yeah, but you can only tell from the other side.
Okay, I like that one more than I think you did, but
I got it. It was good. Yeah. I'm chuckling. It's there. I got it.
All right.
Well, so here's what I want to do is I want to take it and I want to put that as the startup ringtone on people's computers.
Way, way back in the day, the science teacher and I had, we taught with very, very challenging children. So we needed ways to, restore sanity and have some fun and that. So I had taken his computer. I visited his computer and added a startup video. So every time he started it up, it would do the, you remember the Mac burning video with when they went to Intel?
Oh, yes, yes.
The bunny suit thing and that.
The bunny suit video.
Computer.
It's a good commercial.
And then I put a couple of other ones. I'd go and change the, he did not have the knowledge to undo that. So every time he started his computer, he was treated to a video. So
Toasted Bunny. Toasted Bunny's the name of the video.
The Toasted Bunny one. Yeah. All right. Where do shopping mall disputes get settled?
Shopping mall disputes?
Mm-hmm.
Are those still around?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Still some
I don't
of know. Them. Not many, but some. They get settled in food court.
Oh. Mm. Yummy.
I have another friend who just got he gets paid for being a subject in sleep research.
Ooh, that sounds interesting.
Yeah, he said it's his dream job.
Ah.
Mm-hmm. Why can't you put $2 half in your pocket?
$2 half in my pocket? Well, I'm a teacher for one thing, so it just doesn't exist. I don't know. Why?
Two halves make a hole, so your money will fall out.
I got it. Yep. That makes sense.
You can share that one with the new math teacher.
Yeah. I'll try that one on her and see what happens.
Yeah.
They think I'm weird already, so.
My job is to help enforce that. Or maybe reinforce that.
There you go.
Parallel lines have so much in common. It's a shame they'll never meet.
Aww.
Hmm.
Good one for February coming up.
Here's just a little something to think about. You can say, have a nice day, without any problem. But use the phrase, enjoy the next 24 hours. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. DEFCON 3 level compliment there, or wish.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Or you're just saying, if you want it renewed, you have to come back in 24 hours and see me.
It just sounds slightly threatening.
It does. It has that hint to it, yes.
Yeah. I just bought a new answering machine.
You did?
Yeah. What should I ask it?
Ooh, well, did you get Claude or ChatGPT?
I'm going to say this one takes on a... I wonder how many kids would know what an answering machine is.
Did I tell you about the paper dictionary?
No, you did not tell me about the paper dictionary.
Well, then maybe this is a good time to share that story.
Okay.
So I had a student who's working on his Michigan History Day project, and he looked up at me and he says, Mr. McGurr, what does precursor mean? And I said, well, you should probably look that up. And he looked at me, and so I reached over and I grabbed one of my old paperback Webster's dictionaries, and I handed it to him. And he looks at me and he says, oh, I've heard about these. Like they're mythical. And I just I laughed inside. Yeah. So, yeah, they're like that. That's
the I one. Like that. I have a couple of visual jokes for you over at middleschoolmatters.com. And there's when I say a couple, I mean, there's two. And one you'll find later. And one it's about catching friends up. So.
Yep.
So, yeah. So speaking of catching friends up.
Yeah.
This week. We're going to go to the museum.
Huh. I like museums.
And Dave just does a great job with this one. It's about museum-based educators. And I think you're going to enjoy it. So here, without further ado, is the wonderful Mr. Dave Bidlowski. In the Middle School Science Minute.
Hi, this is David Lowski of K12Science.net, and this is your K-12 Science Podcast. I was recently reading the November-December 2025 issue of The Science Teacher, a publication of the National Science Teaching Association. And I read the section, Career of the Month, written by Luba Vangalova. And she wrote an article entitled, Museum-Based Science Educator, Tammy Cook Andres. And she wrote that museum-based science educators encourage curiosity and hands-on learning about science. Depending on their areas of expertise, they may work with children, adults, or people of all ages. Tammy Cook Andres works as a professional learning facilitator and instructional coach at the Exploratorium in San Francisco, using her knowledge of both science and pedagogy to run programs that help early career science teachers to create more engaging and effective lessons for their students. The field of museum education is most suitable for people who have some teaching experience, enjoy working with people, and can inspire a love of science. Tammy went on to say that she works primarily on two programs. One directly helps teachers, and the other helps teacher leaders and coaches of teachers to hone their practice. For the program working directly with teachers, she designs and leads professional learning programs in the form of online workshops, weekend workshops, and multi-week summer programs. For example, They may play around with density columns to see how well beads and other materials float and discuss how we might explain to ourselves what we're seeing and how one activity might help explain what's happening in another activity. Lots of people can tell you the formula for density or the Archimedes principle, but being able to explain these concepts to others is really hard. The workshops are designed to help teachers themselves gain a deeper understanding of the concepts, as well as how other people think about them, and then to apply that knowledge to craft learning experiences that encourage kids to make sense of the concepts for themselves. They also develop an appreciation for how this can be a more effective way to learn compared to just giving people definitions and explanations. As a kid, she loved camping and exploring the natural world. In eighth grade, she went on a field trip to the Exploratorium, a magical place that encouraged curiosity and figuring things out for herself. Seeing that learning could be exciting like this made her want to become a teacher. Later, while serving as an aide to her high school chemistry teacher, she remembers telling him that she wasn't sure if she knew enough to help others learn. But he assured her that knowing everything is not what makes a good teacher, and this boosted her confidence that she was on the right path. After earning a bachelor's degree in biology and a master's in science education, she worked as a science teacher in elementary and middle schools. She attended an Exploratorium teacher program one summer, which inspired her to think about how to create learning experiences where the learning unfolds for kids as they make sense of things themselves. Later, she joined their leadership program as a support group facilitator for new teachers and eventually became an instructional coach. Her advice for students? Stay curious and hold on to your sense of wonder and your drive to understand the world around you. Being a lifelong learner sets the stage for being a great museum educator. Museums can cover many branches of science, so she recommends studying the one you love most. Familiarize yourself with the museums near you. Many provide opportunities for high school and college students, as well as recent college graduates, to engage in research or to facilitate learning experiences for museum guests. And these types of experiences can eventually lead to jobs. And this has been your K-12 Science Podcast.
You said you had a snow day this week.
We did. We had a snow day. The low pressure cell coming down to us from central Michigan decided to park. And as a result, it picked up all that warm water off of the lakes and said, "Let us turn it into snow." So we had some snow, and it was completely unexpected. They told us, "No, a trace to an inch. The rest of the state's going to get snow. You guys aren't going to get any." Well, it wasn't true.
So were you expecting the day off or no?
No, absolutely not. No. We had plans, and we were like, "This is going to happen." Now we've been told in the administrative type of way. If you're not familiar with the administrative type of way of being told about a future snow day, they will say, if we have Tuesday, or school on Tuesday. So we've already been, that's the hint. We're probably not going to have school on Tuesday. The forecast is 25 below.
Wow.
Maybe that's the high. So it may get as low as 35 below.
That's a little chilly.
That is. And so we're expected to, this is when I should have brought that glow plug for my engine, right? Things I didn't think about when I bought the truck 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. We're looking at the polar vortex is going to sit right on top of us next week. And the week after that, it's going to be a high of -4 degrees without the wind chill. So, yeah, we're looking at probably a couple cold days. We have two snow days left, which means after this, we have to go to virtual snow days or virtual days, which means in our district, that means everybody has to log in at a certain time.
Yeah.
They then have to tell the kids, you have to do two iReady assignments, and that is your assignment for the day.
Wow.
I'll throw in the vocab practice too, but admin doesn't have to know that. And then we have to stand for a half hour in case anybody has any questions.
I was going to say, what is your responsibility if they're doing canned program kind of thing? So
right. And then we can go. But yeah, we have to have office hours open for a half hour. So I have to sit here at the computer with my camera on and wait for kids to pop in. But one of the things we've done in the past is we've said, look, we'll keep it on for, I don't know, like an hour. And if you just want to come in and hang out and just want to talk, it doesn't have to be about school or anything. If you just want to come in, you can come in and we'll talk with you. You know, we're here. This year's group is not that way. They would much rather we get out of their way so they can go play games. But I can go turn the ClassWise on, and I can document what they're really doing in ClassWise.
Yeah.
And I can also do a force link where I can say, nope, I know where they are, but I want them on this web page, and I can make them go there. They don't necessarily like it. I had a student who wanted to do anything except what are you supposed to do in class. And I decided that my will was going to be stronger than his. And so I just kept force opening a page that he was supposed to be on.
Yeah.
And finally he opened up a Google doc and in giant letters wrote, stop. I was like, nope. And I slammed him right into this at where he was supposed to be. You know, he has to get the picture. So I did do that at one time. But it's also beneficial because sometimes I let them go to their games and then I can just use that and I'll say, mass block this link. Right. And all of a sudden, you know, that's how I curate a list of, you know, where their games are.
Yeah. That's the whack-a-mole that I hate playing from a, filtering perspective because.
Yep. And I have to do one at a time. And I'm up to 128 websites.
Yeah. And for me, it just partly it becomes, okay, you want to block that game, but another teacher sees value in that one and they want them to have access to it. Kind of thing, you know?
Yeah. And as a side note, and we didn't talk about this before the show, it didn't hit me till just now. The state of Michigan has just passed a cell phone law in the House. They're expecting maybe one or two minor changes in the Senate, but by and large, this is going to pass. It passed, I think there are only 10 votes against it in the House, which means the Senate's going to vote for it. And then the governor's already said she's going to sign it. So coming here in the next two months, maybe 3 months before session breaks, or before summer session, I expect that we're going to see a cell phone bill passed here, or law in the state of Michigan, banning cell phones in schools. So now teachers have the ability to look at a parent and say, I know you really, really want to contact your student, but the law says they can't access their phones in class anymore. So I mean, that's nice. The nice thing is the polling says that 70% of parents do want cell phones banned in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
In practice, though, I don't know where those 70% of the parents are. It's a dichotomy that I'm just not able to wrap my head around because I get a lot of kids who will look at me and go, they hold up the phone. They're not supposed to. And they'll say, it's my mom. Can I answer? And I was like, if I let you answer, I'm in trouble with my boss. So the answer is no. And they're like, I got it. And then they ask to go to the bathroom. No, it's not like I don't know what you're doing.
Right.
So, yeah, there's a culture behind it. I think we're going to have to work at changing. And I'll find the bill number and I'll post it in the show notes if you want to see what the bill is that passed the House.
And
I had
think
to go through some changes.
Yeah, and I think we're going to see more and more of that. And Most states now state that schools have to have some kind of policy in place, right?
Yep.
And we're seeing a range of parent responses. There's parents that don't want kids to have any kind of device at all. There's parents that that want their child to have their device with them at all times, because if they want to know where they are, they want to be able to contact them in an emergency. And you know, there's pretty much everything in between. And it's been interesting. I was talking to a whole bunch of other tech directors the other day, and one of them brought up that it's like there's a lot of parents that want us to put the restraints in place because they don't feel comfortable doing that. Or there's parents that were like, I wasn't going to get my kid a phone, but, and just listen to the message there, right? I wasn't, right. But I did. And it's interesting. And I was talking to a friend. I remember talking to a friend a while ago, and she was like, my husband texts my kid like during the school day. And I'm like, what are you doing? And he's like, well, she'll get it when she gets it. And it's like, no, she's going to pay attention to it in part because it's from you. And it was interesting to listen to her talk about her child and her husband. And it's like, it's not stuff that she needed to know right now, but it was on his mind, so he was going to send it to her. It's like, okay. And she got in trouble several times because she wasn't supposed to have her phone out. And, of course, it bzz, bzz, and she got it out. So, and then I think it's also going to be interesting to follow what's going on in Australia at this point. And see how that plays out.
The House Bill 411, I'm sorry, 4141, haha, 411. That was not. also covers devices that are non-telecommunicative. So in other words, this also covers devices that don't necessarily have a telecommunications chip inside of it. That has to be regulated too. I think they did a pretty good job with it. Like, if, for example, there are diabetes sensors that connect to your phone. Those are okay. Kid can have those out and open in the classroom. But they even want to regulate the telephonic abilities of laptops. You know, your phone connects to your laptop, and your laptop can make the phone call. And they're saying, well, that's got to get regulated too.
And it's going to be very interesting as if glasses do become a thing.
Oh, yes.
And because there's always, right now, I hear of the watch right now is one that I think is interesting because it seems to be like, it's an exception, it's okay, but if you have a watch that is either you're close enough to your phone in your locker, or if it has cellular service, then, you know, you can do stuff on your watch. It's a small screen, so you're not doing as much, but still, you can do quite a bit. And earbuds. You know, if a kid has long hair,
right,
it's pretty hard to tell. So it's going to be interesting as because again, it's, you know, we're playing whack-a-mole with these things. Like, okay, how about this device? What about this device? And like glasses, like what if you have a kid who has glasses and they're prescription glasses, and you're going to have conversation because the kid's going to be like, well, but it's prescription. I can't see without it. Like, uh-huh. And, you know, so that's going to be interesting.
Yeah, the PSAT makes teachers who give the PSAT have to go through a whole orientation, let's call it, every year. And every year, more and more things get added to the list of you can't bring this into the room. You can't bring this into the room. And that's because they found students finding ways to cheat on their tests using technology. We're pretty sure there's a kid in the on the other seventh grade team. He went up 80 points in math. That means he's doing above eighth grade level math as a seventh grader.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't know very many seventh graders who like to do math as a hobby. Just not in our building. It's not our thing. We're pretty sure he cheated. Just can't prove it, right? But the PSAT keeps coming up with all these new ways and saying, nope, can't do this, can't do that, can't do this, can't do that. I imagine glasses will be someday one of those things, right? It's interesting listening to one of the legislators who talked about this bill passing. I can't remember which one it was. It wasn't Mark Tisdale. It was somebody else. And they said, you know, if you're a parent, this is a really good reason to buy one of those flip phones. They said, get a flip phone for your kid. If all these things are really, really that important to you, get a flip phone for your kid, because that's going to be the easiest way to do it, and let them have this on them throughout the school day. And actually, they're still making flip phones, and they're making new models all the time, apparently. And I'm thinking about like making this a piece of a newsletter. I really should, because we're getting a new team member. Just saying, hey, you know, what do you think about this, parents? And maybe putting in a link. This is, give us your feedback. And that's also a great way to update our parent email list, because they have to put in where I ask them put in their email when they do a vote. I have ulterior motives. Right,
it's
now it's bad
motives. That's right.
Yeah, I did put a link to the legislature in there. I might go find a link of a lot of this reminds me of the Chinese parents when the kids take the Gaokao, which is a really, really big test at the end of their 11th grade year or 12th grade year. Determines what kind of university they can get into if they want to get into a university. The parents actually climb the walls and will shout the answers to the questions into the kids, invalidating the test, obviously, but they don't because they can't afford to do the test again. So, but it's, you know, parents climbing the walls to make sure their kid gets into a good college. I'm not necessarily sure that our parents would, in my district, would do that, but I don't think that they're opposed to them. You know, a lot of them are just okay with just taking the box and moving through life. Yeah.
And like I said, talking to a bunch of people last week, it was very interesting, and that a lot of parents are also struggling with this, because on one hand, they want something. They want their kid to not be on a phone all the time. On the other hand, it's hard to do. It's hard to tell the kid no constantly.
Right. You know, and they can be relentless.
So, all right. Speaking of relentless, you had kind of a fun activity. We're familiar with the college football playoffs and March Madness, but you kind of did a little March Madness thing here in January.
I did.
Yeah.
I didn't know you want to talk about that right now. Okay. All right. You can do that. My short answer. Yeah. No, I put this later in the show. I didn't realize it was up here this high.
Oh,
it was,
okay.
Was
you want to do it later?
The bottom of the show. No, let's do it now. This is a good spot.
Okay. Do it now.
So March Madness. So I was listening to Cult of Pedagogy, and they have their annual website announcement where you can pay a bunch of money and get recommendations for technology and education. Okay. I don't pay for the website, and I don't pay for the podcast. But they gave us their top six technology for 2026. Okay. And one of them sounded very intriguing. And so I tried it. And it's called My Short Answer, or Short Answer. The website is My Short Answer, but the app, I believe, is called just Short Answer. And it's free to sign up. Doesn't cost you a thing. And they've got five or six different games that you can use to help kids have fun with writing short answers to questions. They have a bank of questions you can use. You can use theirs. You can make your own. And then what they'll do is they will help you write a good question. Then they will help you write sentence stems. And AI will do that. So it will provide structure if you want it. And you just click the AI, and the AI comes up with it. And you just approve whichever ones you want. And then you can play games with it. Now, they suggest doing head-to-head match, as that's their most popular one.
Yeah.
But they have other ones, Pen Pal and some other things. I've not tried any of those. I've only tried the head-to-head. And I got a really good response. The kids really, really enjoyed writing and then having their writing compete against other students. Did I have students who took advantage of it and did some stupid stuff? Absolutely. I teach seventh grade. They're going to try that. I expect that.
Right.
Yeah.
So when you say head to head, what is it? What does that mean? Like, does the students wrote a paragraph, and what happened then?
So you give them the writing prompt, and as kids are signing up, they get a chance to see the prompt, and then you can do it timed or untimed. And when you open it up, the kids then write a paragraph response. It's a short answer. Not supposed to be an essay. And so the kids write a short answer. And then I usually give them 5 minutes on the timer. And it then kicks it out and says, all right, we're setting up the brackets. And it's just like you said with March Madness. Mm-hmm. It sets up brackets. And then the kids are pooled into four different brackets. And they then choose left or right. They read two paragraphs or two answers, and they pick the one on the left or they pick the one on the right. Excuse me. And then they're given a second choice, sometimes a third, depending on when your kids are in the class. And then the winner of that bracket moves to a semifinal.
Okay.
And the kids do it again. And the winners of that bracket move to a final. And the kids do it again. And out of that final, you get your first, second, third, and fourth place winners. And then, I don't know, you can give them a little candy or you can, you know, yay.
You can give them three bonus points.
Yeah.
Out of 10 million.
Right. Yeah. The added feature, added bonus to this, and this is brought up on Cult of Pedagogy, is that you kind of get an exemplar of what a response could be for that question. And the students created the exemplar, right?
Yeah.
And then you can use that. And so if, let's say you're creating an essay question in Moodle and you want a reference text for Moodle to use to grade against. Well, the kids just wrote your sample text to grade against.
Right.
Yep.
And the kids get to see other answers, and they can hopefully kind of help them self-reflect moving forward as to like, oh, I see. I had picked that one because they included more detail or, you know, something as well.
Yeah. And that's one of the downsides right now using it at the middle level is the kids are looking at it as a popularity contest in some ways, not all of them. They're not using criteria to judge correctly because the kids will say, I'm the fluffy bunny, because it's anonymized, right?
So it is anonymized. They don't see a name associated with the...
I can choose. I can click it, toggle a switch. So, like, okay. At the end, you know, it'll say Fluffy Bunny, Drippy Cloud, you know, Sneezy Rain. I don't know, something. They make up names. Mm-hmm. But at the very end, you know, when it's anonymized on the board, it was like, who was such and such? And, of course, the winner's jumping up and down, so they know who that is. Sure. But then I can toggle a switch, and then they can see who the top four were because it'll put their name that they gave at the beginning of the thing. I'd like to see it tied to their Google account so that they could either save this answer as a document, or they could then I could then also then enforce some accountability by saying, all right, so when you said you'd like to travel back in time and hit the person who invented school, we should talk about this. That's a problem.
Let's have a chat.
Yeah. Because that was one of the things that happened. That, and I had a special ed student who didn't understand what we were doing. It was the first time. I didn't know what was going to happen. But he sat on the 6 key, and he just ran the 6 key as far as he could, you know, during the time allotted. And it didn't get upvoted, but I noticed that he did it. And the kids recognized it for what it was. But by the same token, he was also kind of wasting their time because they had to evaluate it compared to somebody else. There's others I'd like to try. I'd also like the ability to kick like a bad piece out. I'd like to, you know, just, but I don't have the chance to do that. I'm kind of trusting the kids to be mature about things, which my group, this last year's group, definitely would do it and would use the criteria. This year's group, I don't know that they would. I know that they wouldn't. They didn't. Not all. How do I move those kids into the group that says, all right, let's help make this a better experience for everybody. And I think one of the ways I'm going to do that is that at the end, I'll use this consistently. Now, I haven't done it with serious questions yet, so that's another problem. But when I start doing it with some serious questions, I did it. They said, try it with fun ones first, get the kids used to it and you used to it, and then try some serious ones. And they'll help you write the serious ones. And so I'm gonna do that and see what happens on more serious ones. But then I think at the end of a unit or at the end of a thing or end of a week, then I'm going to turn it into a write this out on paper. I'll use the same question and have them just do it on paper themselves and turn it into me and see where we go with that as a way to kind of add some accountability and say, look, I know you're complaining about it now, but didn't you not see this question before? Did you not take the response seriously then? So in the future, let's do this. Let's take a look at what everybody's written. You know, use this as a way to learn and use it a way to evaluate and change and improve your own response when we get down to the end of the week and see if we can do that. I don't know that that'll work with this group in particular. But I think overall, by and large, across the middle school realm, it's a good idea. And I think it would work. Now, if you want, so you get access to everything for 40 days. But after 40 days, they want you to pay $70 to use this service. I don't know. I've got 30 days left. And the Social Studies Department liked it when we talked about it in our PLC meeting. And so we're going to kind of pilot this. And we may go to the curriculum director and say, we've been piloting this and working with this. We're getting these type of responses because we can download all the responses as a CSV file.
Yeah.
And then we can demonstrate to them. So this is what we're getting. And we're gamifying the writing process. All we want is $70 for each sixth grade teacher or each social studies teacher. So what, 6 times 7 is a lot of money.
$75 per year. They have a basics, which is $0 per year, unlimited question launches,
right?
All in Parrot and Battle Royale activities, and 60 sessions, 60 students per session.
Yes.
And lots of limitations. And then the... $75 per year gives you like stuff.
Yeah, it opens up everything else. Plus, you get
stuff. Yeah,
you get some more diagnostics or some downloadable stuff. So,
yeah,
Yeah, well, the price has gone up since Friday.
They have a group plan with custom pricing. So,
yeah.
Which is their best deal. They don't tell you how much it is, but you have to request the quote.
But the thing is, I don't necessarily want everybody to do this, right? I don't want everybody, because then it becomes a nothing, right? Oh, we're doing this again.
You can do per month as well, just FYI. It's $12 per month, which if you were doing it for the whole year, it would be $144. But if you were just doing it for a couple of months or 1 month or something, I don't know. So.
Oh, just I thought it was $70 for the year. I misunderstood that.
So, yeah. All right. so one of the things I've continued to wonder is where curriculum is going, since more and more teachers seem to be using AI to write lesson plans and create unit plans. And I'm just wondering if textbooks are really going to get a hit and schools are going to go, we're just going to let AI write the curriculum and away we go. And this is just me. I haven't heard tons of this from other people, but just kind of playing out the future, I just wonder if it's not going to be a, if it's not going to be a thing. So, you know, just go to AI and say, hey, write me a year-long curriculum for ancient Civ. Here's the kids that I have. Here's the, you know, here's the starting time and the ending time. And just have it go. Sean disagrees with me.
No, I'm trying to remember, because we talked last week about that article in that book, and I pulled it out and I was reading it this week, and now I can't remember the name of it again. But that falls in line with some of the research that's being done through National Council for the Social Studies texts on AI, saying if we offload this cognitive task, what are the potential pitfalls? The law of unintended consequences is going to come into play here somehow. What's the best case scenario? And what's the worst case scenario of the law of unintended consequences? What could happen? And is there a way we can head this off at the pass? Are we offloading too much? I don't know. Particularly because everything changes so fast, right? Google Gemini announced this week that that they will be able to go in and interlink Gemini with all of your Google apps, Mail, Docs, photos and all this sort of thing. And then while you're working within those things, do you have something you need? Like, I really would like a picture here of something, and it's over in your Google Photos. It'll go over and get it for you and make it available to put in your doc, which is not an easy thing to do in Google Docs all the time. Claude has announced that for the Mac, and I think recently for some others, that if you install Claude into your computer, it'll go through and it'll clean up your desktop for you, and it'll clean up this for you, and it'll clean up your downloads folder for you. And I was like, okay, thank you. But by the same token, it sees and reads everything. What goes back to Anthropic? I don't know.
Right. And so it cleans up your desktop for you. How is it different from tossing everything into one folder? Because, you know, does it make sense for you?
And it creates a reliance, because now I have to go to Claude and say, where'd you put such and such? Yeah, go find that for me.
And I can say that, having seen lots of desktops, man, there are people that have, that just save everything to the desktop, which is essentially a lack of strategy.
Yeah, right? That's true. Yeah,
it's like, I don't know, I just put it on the desktop. Like, okay, you could put it in your documents folder, at least, where it would, I don't know. I don't know how much of a difference that really makes, though. I mean, generally your desktop is covered anyway with Windows, and so. But it just hurts the soul.
Yeah, yeah. There are people that's important to them, right?
So, you know.
And for other people, that's their organizational strategies. I have to see it. I want it right here where I can see it.
Yeah.
And I get it. Like, sometimes on some operating systems, a downloads folder is obscure and hidden away, and it's hard to find sometimes. I emailed an H5P activity to the other 7th grade social studies teacher. And I said, hey, I made this. Let's start looking at this as getting our kids ready for the PSAT in 8th grade. Let's throw in some questions that are in the same style and format, so they're not thrown by the question. They're thrown by, you know, the content instead. Let's take some of the obstacles out of the way. And he's like, yeah. So I sent it to him. He came back and goes, I don't know where it went, but I saw it and I downloaded it. I said, well, where's your downloads folder? He goes, I don't know. He goes, can you help me? I said, no, it's Windows. I don't know where that is either. I don't use it enough to know.
Windows.
Well, we had several conversations this week where people came to me and said, something about Windows. And I was like, this is why I use a Mac. I don't know. I just don't know. I haven't used it in so long, though.
Yeah, I'm still trilingual there. I still, I rarely use Windows, but I do occasionally use Windows, and I don't use Linux often, but sometimes I do. So, and I would argue the other language that you speak is the social web.
Oh, the social web. That's, I guess, a type of language. Susie Dent, she tried to sneak in a word of the week, but she put it over somewhere else. So Susie Dent said, I love how the word atone wears its heart on its sleeve. It begins at one because to atone is to bring back unity. Hmm. Atonement is really at one meant. In the same way that alone began as all one. I thought that was a pretty interesting etymology. So I'll share that with you. Rick Wormley posted this week, this one from Carl Hendrick, really has me thinking and valuing some time spent reading it. The algorithmic turn, the emerging evidence on AI tutoring that's hard to ignore. And that's one of the things that I know that teachers in my building have started to do is say, hey, let's build a tutor so that these kids can go over. And if they don't know something already, which is quite a few, how can they then get a tutor to teach them what they don't know so they can get caught up to where they should be in the curriculum? Because that's one of the big things that we're seeing is that so many kids are doing the lay flat thing that they're falling farther and farther and farther behind. And it becomes easier and easier to say, well, I'll just lay flat. I just keep floating through because I'm already so far behind. Why should I do the work to catch up? So maybe we can trick them into doing it. I did have an interesting interaction with a student this week. I was in an IEP and I told the parent and the other folks there, I said, well, one of the things that this student has done is he's been helping us pilot the AI for the resource room. I said, and we're really appreciative that he's being willing to do that. I said, so what do you think about, you know, Danu, which I've talked about on the show? And he goes, I hate it. And we expected that. I said, so what do you hate about it? What's the problem? He goes, well, I don't like it. I said, is it because it just doesn't straight up tell you the answer? Yep. That's exactly why I don't like it. Good. It's working. Right. But he's using it. And so, you know, it's that tutoring piece, and it's helping out in the special ed resource room because I'm social studies, and technically, I'm not supposed to send kids down But because I've got these scaffolds in place and I've got these other things in place, the special ed teachers don't really turn them away. They're like, okay, your soul stays, go over and do their thing and I'll be with you in a minute. And they just do their thing. Because it's there already. So we're trying to make the special ed teachers' lives easier. And I think that's one of the things. I'm interested in reading this article. I haven't had a chance to look at the Substack yet. I just saw he posted this here recently. So if he's interested in the tutoring side of things, then I'm wondering where he's going to go with it, because he's somebody who thinks about the pedagogy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it didn't come through. I'll have to find it.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Ron King. I was trying to read quickly while you were talking, and it looks interesting. I'm going to have to go back and actually read it instead of just skimming it. So,
yeah, the topic, I think, is one that's going to be it all comes down to, just like everything, it all comes down to, you got to get the kids to use it.
Right.
Yeah. We did iReady testing this week, and one of the kids came to me, and he went up 57 points. That's 1, 2.5 grade levels in reading. And he was super behind. So I'm not surprised he went up that high. He could have gone up that high, I should say. And I looked at him, I said, holy cow. I said, look at that. You're almost to your stretch goal. I said, what's the difference? He goes, oh, he says, you actually make us do it. And that's been the difference. Oh,
okay.
Okay. File that one back in the brain here. But yeah, you know, all comes down to doing it. Ron King posted a couple of pictures from the Pacific Northwest, and I was going to throw those in there as examples of beautiful pictures, or just Ron King, because we haven't heard from Ron King in a very long time. Mm-hmm. And so I just wanted to brighten people's day. And then Eric Kurtz posted back home from another amazing FETC, Future Educational Technology Conference. It was so wonderful to get to learn with so many amazing educators and catch up with old friends and make new ones. All my resources from my sessions can be found at, and he put a link in the mm-hmm. show notes, or I put a link in the show notes to his sessions. So you can go over there and grab. Eric Kurtz is great at just making everything available. You can go over and grab whatever you want. It's a great, wonderful resource over at ControlAltAchieve.com.
All right. Sean, you might be, well, maybe not so much you, but somebody may come to you and ask you, what can you do with Notebook LM?
And that's changed so much recently, too, hasn't it?
And, yeah, it's like one of those things that's like, well, what can you do with Notebook LM?
Yeah.
And so I found this and I thought this was interesting. This is not necessarily targeted just at teachers, but it is just kind of in general. But I still think it's a good overview for, okay, what are people doing with Notebook LM and what can you do with it? So they have 7 things pointed out. Including streamlined research and information synthesis. That's something that teachers frequently are looking to do and can provide for students.
Yep, okay. I'm doing it to you.
Okay.
Turnabout is fair play.
Professional grade content creation. Oh, I got to tell you, I was working with somebody the other day, and I was like, "Oh, you're not a regular participant in competitive typing, are you?" And she looked at me. She looked at me and I said, you know, when you're both working on a document at the same time, and so things are jumping around and the goal is to try to keep your sanity.
By the way, the pictures are in and we return you to your normal, regularly scheduled show agenda.
All right. And so second one is professional grade content creation. Third is enhanced learning and training tools. And the podcast thing still is getting some take. And this is one of those places where you can actually use like Notebook LM to create kind of your own choice board. Because you can have it create mind maps or podcasts or video lessons, and then you can let people pick which of those things they're going to do. Competitive analysis, integration with Gemini for interactive outputs. So if you wanted to create a presentation, for example, you can use it to create a presentation. Customization and accessibility, and then applications and marketing and strategic planning. Not that one's not really so much of an educational bit, but I thought they make some nice points and good thought experiment for teachers to look at it. And when kids say, you know, "We're never going to use this," like, well, here you go. There's some things you can do. All right. Sean, you have done two truths and a lie, right?
No. That was my lie.
Yeah, you've done. I know you've done that one. Yeah. Common Sense Media has two truths and AI.
Ooh.
And I have two thoughts on this one. Number one, it's interesting. And what it is essentially is you have kids are presented with three images, for example, and they have to pick the one that is AI generated.
Oh.
Comes in easy, medium, and hard, I think it is. There's three levels. And you get 60 seconds to go through. So it is interesting, and I think it can be useful to help kids teach kids some things. And I think we're also very quickly getting to a point where it's getting very hard to tell whether something is AI generated or
yes.
not.
Yep.
So I'm wondering if this is not almost beyond its useful life. Like its shelf life has run out before it hit the shelf. Because I think we're quickly getting to a point where we have to teach kids to figure out where something is coming from in order to tell whether something is AI generated or not. Because the AI generations are getting so good that it is difficult to tell quickly, especially. But I think it's interesting, and I think it's something that you could certainly use to start to build some of those foundational skills as well. I am not sure how to pronounce Medkarbach. I'm going to guess, is his name. And Medkarbach has some visual guides for educators. And I think these are some really nice resources. They're kind of infographics on a variety of things. They're Common Creative Attribution, Non-Commercial Share-alike license. So you can legally share them with your staff. You could... As a principal, you could use it to share it with your teams and that. They're in different sections, like assessment, formative assessment, simply explained, portfolio assessment, simply explained, rethinking assessment in the age of AI. There's AI literacy. There's like 12 of those, including... our classroom AI agreement, which I think is a great idea. Are teachers creating AI as part of their classroom rules? AI through the SAMR lens. AI literacy for students, a practical guide. There's a section on pedagogy. evidence-based teaching simply explained, experiential learning, systems thinking, teacher's guide. There's literacies, there's AI ethics, there's research methodology. So these are all free. And since they are Creative Commons, you can also mix them and change them up and use them as a starting point to create others. So I just think it's a great resource for folks. Okay. Let's see. I'm going to do this one real quick. This is one that I found and I thought of Sean immediately. And it's called Language Guesser or Lang Guesser. And the idea here is you guess the language's country by its accent. So it's a little game. You listen to a 15-second clip and you guess the country. The score is based on speed and accuracy. And as soon as I thought it, I thought of Sean, and I thought Sean would enjoy that. But I think there's a lot of kids that might enjoy that as well. So if you're looking for something that's kind of fun, I'll do this one real quick here. We use Reach My Teach, which is a paid for program for teachers to communicate with parents. It does translation automatically. Parents get lots of options. I think it's a really great thing. I think it's a really great program. They are based out of Portland, Maine, and the people are really good. It is not a free program. It is a pay program, and that's fine. They need to make a living. But they've also they've shared like a weekly school communication template, and I thought this was a neat idea. It's like, you know, how do you regularly communicate with parents? And they lay it out Monday through Friday, kind of what the message is, who the sender is, who the recipients are, and some notes. So I think it's a great idea. They also have a template so that you can kind of keep track of things and some example messages. So great resource that I thought I'd share with you. All right, and let's end with the culture translator.
Yep, I found the typo.
Slang of the week.
Yeah, slang of the week. So slang of the week, one that I don't know if Troy has heard or not, but the word is chopelganger.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a portmanteau. It's a combination of chopped and doppelganger. So if they say everybody has their twin, right?
Yeah.
Well, what if it's your ugly twin? Well, then they are your chopelganger. Or you could be their chopelganger. But the idea is that this is not a compliment. This is an insult. They're essentially saying that you look like so-and-so, but you're the ugly version of so-and-so. Like Brad Pitt, for example.
Yeah.
Yeah. So be aware that word's making the rounds. So you can get more slang dictionary words at the Parent Guide to Teen Slang. The link is in the show notes, and you can pop over to Access and get some more parent resources for teens.
Okay. And to get all of those links and some things that we didn't talk about this week, head over to middleschoolmatters.com. You can read through the show notes. You could even sign up so that the show notes would be delivered to your inbox every week. Well, just about every week. There will not be a show next week, as Sean is going to be slinging hash.
Yep. Well,
something along those lines.
Yeah, the legal kind.
Yeah, it's like hash browns.
Yeah. Right, yeah. Like pizza sticks and hot dogs and chips and pop. We're going to keep it simple.
Yeah. So no show next week, but we'll be back the week after. But if you sign up, you don't have to worry about that. You will get an email with a link to the show notes and a quick synopsis of what we talked about as well. It's all brought to you free. We don't do lots of tracking or anything as well. So, you know, you don't have to worry about it. We don't share or sell email messages or emails or anything like that. All right. With that, this has been Middle School Matters for middle school educators who care. All opinions expressed on this podcast are exclusively the opinions of the host and guest and not indicative of any employer.